We've had Adlai Stevenson, Jack Kennedy, Alvin Barkley, Estes Kefauver, and your next president, Robert Kennedy!
Viva! Viva! I'm going to ask for your support over the period of the next 5 months because I want to win here in California in the primary in June, win in the convention in August, and with your help, win the election in November of 1968. I come to the state of California because our great nation is troubled and divided. Divided by a war 10,000 miles from our shores, troubled by the decay and the despair in our great cities, our young people divided from our older people, our black people divided from our white population. We were the country that stood for decency and for justice, for confidence and for hope. But now, sometimes it seems, we have something else. And I think that should be changed. And that's why I run for President of the United States. And if there is one overriding reality in this country, it is that we must resist any erosion of a sense of national decency. Make no mistake, decency is at the heart of this whole campaign. Is at the heart of this matter. Poverty is indecent. Illiteracy is indecent. The death, the maiming of brave young men in the swamps of Vietnam and the swamps of Asia, that is also indecent.
I think that As an eyewitness to the assassination and one who was very involved throughout the evening, it's very interesting to note that I was not subpoenaed as a witness to the trial. However, I can say I did not expect to be subpoenaed as a witness. I felt this way simply because I felt that the police department was only interested in witnesses that they could either discredit or witnesses that they could fabricate a story and read to people who would then poly parrot what they wished it to be. I find that those people who contradicted with their accounts of the story and what they wanted to present to the general public were not called in. In fact, just yesterday I talked to my good friend Arthur Bud Schoberg, who was not subpoenaed. I was very unhappy with my encounter with the police department when I went down to the administration building where they had mock-ups and supposedly placed people in certain positions. I was very much struck by their desire to fabricate a story and by their effort to strong-arm me mentally into stating that there were things that I did not agree with.
What I did see that night, I did see. The confusion in my mind came later when people from different sources told me, no, I didn't see it. When Sirhan fired, he was quite a distance from him. A rough guess, 6 to 10 feet. The Los Angeles Police Department never did interview.
Senator Robert F. Kennedy had three gunshot wounds. Gunshot wound number one was a gunshot wound in the back of the head, which is the gunshot wound in the right mastoid behind the right ear. Gunshot wound number two and three were found in the right axilla. Those two were so close that they were within 1 inch in the distance. We were able to determine the muzzle distance based on this, the powder deposit in the right ear and the powder deposit in the scalp behind the ear. That powder was embedded so deeply so that it did not come off. 1 inch and no more than 3 inches distance from the surface of the right ear. Gunshot wound number two and three were also sure a characteristic close-range shooting. Questions that perhaps that could be asked was not asked. I did not testify, and I was not asked. Maybe more story to be told than that we know.
We glorify killing on movie and television screens, and we call it entertainment. We'd make it easier for men of all shades of sanity to acquire weapons and ammunition that they desire. Too often we honor swagger and bluster and the wielders of force. Too often we excuse those who are willing to build their own lives on the shattered dreams of other human beings. Some Americans who preach nonviolence abroad fail to practice it here at home. Some accuse others of rioting and inciting riots, have by their own conduct invited them. Some look for scapegoats. Others look for conspiracies. But this much is clear. Violence breeds violence. Repression breeds retaliation. And only a cleansing of our whole society can remove this sickness from our souls.
There was a press room, that's what it's called, and I was walking in there, and there was a bag full of passes. This is embassy room passes. So I walked in there, and I put my hand in there, and I took about 8 of them. And then I went out, you know, 8 or 7 or 6, and I gave them all to my friends. You know, I gave it to a guy named Brent Gold, Scott Inyart, him. And during the night when we were there, I took persons to the kitchen, you know, to the kitchen of the Ambassador Hotel, like maybe a half hour before the assassination. Security was really bad, lousy. Anybody could go.
We arrived at the embassy at 8:30.
Security said only people with press passes and with official yellow badges that I think that said embassy on it. And if one didn't have this badge or a press identification, they weren't allowed. And I did witness a press man showing his credentials, and he had his wife, and they didn't allow his wife to go in around that time.
I saw a few security guards ahead of the senator in the kitchen. I think there was a security guard to my rear, to the left of my rear, which would have been pretty close to the senator.
I noticed the senator's party had started to come in. He was stopping and shaking hands. And then he was finally up to us, and I said, "Hello, Senator," and this girl who was with me, Robin Kasdan, shook his hand. The kitchen corridor was not guarded whatsoever.
I noticed the lack of security. There were very, very few security officers. The flow of people in and out of the embassy room was controlled by a fire department captain who was concerned about the possible fire hazard of having too many people in the embassy room.
We ourselves must change in order to master change. We must rethink our old ideas and beliefs before they capture and before they destroy us. For those answers, America must look to its young people, the children of this time of change, and we look especially to that privileged minority of educated men and women who are the students of this country. For the answers we seek must be found in the light of reason, by fact and logic and careful thought, unsustained by violent prejudices or by myths. And those are the answers which your education has equipped you, more than any other group in this country, has equipped you to find. Plato said that if we are to have any hope for the future, that those who have lanterns will pass them on to others. You must use your lamps, the lamps of your learning, to show our people past the forest of stereotypes and slogans into the clear light of reality and of fact and of truth.
I was taking pictures at the time that the shots were being fired, and I was apparently spotted by a guard or some security person who works for the hotel, and I was followed outside, and I was chased, and I didn't know who it was, and I wasn't about to give up my camera. And so they came up to me and they said, you know, we believe you have evidence in the camera. And they said, and they asked me if I did. And I said, to my knowledge, I said, I do have something, you know, on film. So they said, well, are you going to release it to us? So I said, well, I'd rather not. It's my film. So, you know, I said, I'd like to process it. They said, well, then we can hold you for withholding evidence unless you release it to us. And I said, you know, all right. I said, I'll give you the camera. I said, will you let me go? And they said, no, we have to hold you for questioning. So they locked me in a room with a few other people till about 3 in the morning. And then I got my camera back. There was no film in the camera when I got it back. They had told me that the film has been confiscated. So when I opened the camera, there's nothing in it. I saw
Sirhan and a lady and another gentleman consistently throughout the evening. I refused to bulge in my belief and knowledge that there was a girl in a black and white some type of dress. I couldn't exactly say it was polka dot involved with Sirhan, and that I myself, upon the shooting, followed, of course, through the kitchen, through the back, all the way up to the ground level of the ambassador, leading into the parking lot, in pursuit of two individuals that I saw flee at the time of the shooting.
I was doing a story for our paper on poverty in the Whittier area, and I came across this woman, and we started discussing the Kennedy assassination. She had taken some girls in this poverty program over to the victory speech that night. However, she also got involved, and she was maybe, as I understood it, 5 or 10 yards from the senator when he was shot. She said she saw this girl with a polka dot dress. She saw a man that looked to her in the photographs like Sirhan. And she said she had seen these people earlier in the evening talking to each other, and she made the remark that the dress wasn't a very good dress. It was cheap.
Just about the time Kennedy came into the room, there was this girl who was fairly thin, almost scrawny, so she stood out a little bit. She had sort of button-like things on her dress. Now, she wasn't the image of the polka dot dress that I heard of. The polka dot dress that I've heard described as someone in a chic sort of mode polka dot dress. Well, she wasn't chic in any manner. Her dress was simple. It was light in its color. And she did have this polka dot appearance with buttons, and I suppose it might have been designs, you know, splotchy designs on the dress itself. But she didn't look like she was well-dressed for the occasion. She just simply looked slightly out of place.
In the kitchen area, there were three people, a short, dark-complected individual, a tall, dark-complected individual, and a girl. I remember that she had on a polka dot dress. And this is when I noticed one of them was peeping through a door or glass. I believe it was
on the left side, opposite the colonial room, there's a room called the press room. And it was there my friend and I first spotted Sirhan. There was another young man with him. The other man next to Sirhan was tall and slender, and he definitely, in my opinion, was Latin.
But this is a time of shame and a time of sorrow. It is not a day for politics. I have saved this one opportunity, my only event of today, to speak briefly to you about the mindless menace of violence in America, which again stains our land and every one of our lives. It is not the concern of any one race. The victims of the violence are black and white, rich and poor, young and old, famous and unknown. They are, most important of all, human beings whom other human beings loved and needed. No one, no matter where he lives or what he does, can be certain who next will suffer from some senseless act of bloodshed. And yet it goes on and on and on in this country of ours. Why? What has violence ever accomplished? What has it ever created? No martyr's cause has ever been stilled by an assassin's bullet. No wrongs have ever been righted by riots and civil disorders. A sniper is only a coward, not a hero. And an uncontrolled or uncontrollable mob is only the voice of madness, not the voice of the people. Whenever any American's life is taken by another American unnecessarily, whether it is done in the name of the law or in defiance of the law, by one man or by a gang, in cold blood or in passion, in an attack of violence or in response to violence, whenever we tear at the fabric of our lives, which another man has painfully and clumsily woven for himself and his children, whenever we do this, then the whole nation is degraded. Among free men, said Abraham Lincoln, there can be no successful appeal from the ballot to the bullet. And those who take such appeal are sure to lose their case and pay the cost.
Sirhan took the Jordanian sign because he is from Jordan.
He was very, very, very strong about his beliefs. I mean, he was unwavering in anything, especially with this particular
subject.
He was
very hateful against the Jewish people. And he said, now, I cannot forgive, and I like to be like you. I said, now, come with me to my church, and you are going to maybe to learn how to forgive, and so. And more, he could, I like to be like you, he could not. So. But he was always here quite rebellious. When I gave him order, always he was resentful.
I feel very strongly about this, and I was sorry to hear it, and I'm sorry that I knew a boy that would do a thing like that.
He was a very fine boy. If every boy acted like he acted, it'd be a wonderful world. But now, wait a minute. Except doing what he did now.
Yeah, I shot a man. I shot Kane. I told him that. For killing a human being, I told you I would gladly go there, Kane. I would gladly go. But for killing Kennedy, sir, I'm not guilty in no way. In no way do I feel any guilt. Because he's just as much a killer as Edmund was. Everybody wants to have me have justice. Why didn't they catch him, sir? And he said that he was going to give those 50 bombers to Israel. Hell, that's showing guy right there. That's mass murder right there you're talking about. Well, it's because the Arabs are being murdered, that's all right. That's your philosophy, you know. Not with me, sir. My people, Mr. Buller. They're my people. Well, you can tell that to the Jewish one.
I don't understand. I don't understand when you say you don't feel guilty for killing Kennedy. Because, in other words, you feel he was a murderer, too.
Yes, sir. I do. Apparently, I do believe so.
Well, if he was a murderer, he would have been a murderer.
He thought about it just as much. He must have thought about it into that.
You, of course, believe that Kennedy had the power to send those jet bombers to Israel.
No, he had the power to tell God what to do. I believe that firmly.
About 24 hours ago this time, I was entering the Supreme Court, and a young girl came up to me and said, I'm so excited for you. This is terribly exciting. And of course, I'm excited myself. She said, this is the first time I've been in a court either. As I was going in, there were 12 Kennedys in the audience. So if anything got out of hand, we outnumbered the justices. I heard somebody say to one of the guards, it's just like what Roosevelt tried in 1937.
The Los Angeles County Grand Jury is presently hearing testimony and reviewing evidence in the matter of Sharan B. Sharan, accused slayer of Senator Robert F. Kennedy. At the conclusion of their deliberation, As in the custom, the grand jury will proceed to Department 100 of Superior Court and present their findings to the presiding judge of the Master Calendar Criminal Court. In the event a grand jury indictment is returned today, a Superior Court arraignment will be held approximately 45 minutes later at the Los Angeles County Men's Central Jail, 441 Boucher Street, with Judge Arthur L. Alarcon presiding over a special session in Department 100 held in temporary court facilities provided by Sheriff. Upon presentation of proper press credentials at the visitor's lobby of the facility, members of the news media will be escorted to the location of the arraignment. The location of the arraignment site was agreed upon after a conference between the Sheriff Peter J. Pitches, presiding judge of Superior Court Donald R. Wright, Judge Arthur L. Alarcon, and representatives of District Attorney's Office and Public Defender Richard S. Buckley. Saran is being held in the Sheriff's custody at the Infirmary Section of Los Angeles County Men's Central Jail due to injuries sustained during his apprehension. Sheriff Peter J. Pitches stated, it is for this reason, coupled with obvious need for total security, that this arraignment site was selected.
We expect him to get psychiatric treatment and then come under the aegis of the parole board to decide whether he can go out into society without being a menace to our people. In the event that the disease is incurable, well, then we'd expect him to remain in a penitentiary. We do not intend, nor has ever have been our intention, to have him roam the streets as a menace to social order and to our society.
I am now convinced that this jury paid little or no attention to our psychiatric testimony.
Sirhan became angry with both Dr. Diamond and with me and claimed that we were bugging him, as he put it, because he was tired of psychiatrists, and I suspect everyone in the trial also may be tired of psychiatrists.
I think we all justifiably take some pride in the way in which the trial was conducted and the manner in which it was handled. I think everybody who participated, from the investigating officers, the sheriff of Los Angeles County, and everybody did a commendable job on a historic event.
It's a very fine jury. We had lunch together.
Eight for death sentence, two for life, and two undecided.
Only the two for life. What was their reasoning on that, sir?
They felt that the life would be a greater punishment.
The defendant didn't have anything to say. He said he wasn't surprised. He said when we told him that we had done the best we could, he said even Jesus Christ couldn't have saved me.
My brother need not be idealized or enlarged in death beyond what he was in life. To be remembered simply as a good and decent man who saw wrong and tried to right it, saw suffering and tried to heal it, saw war and tried to stop it. Those of us who loved him and who take him to his rest today pray that what he was to us, what he wished for others, will someday come to pass for all the world. As he said many times in many parts of this nation, those he touched and who sought to touch him. Some men see things as they are and say why. I dream things that never were and say why not.